Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, good morning, Kingsley. Now, we have got that One Belt, One Road forum going on in Beijing. Some $78 billion pledged to the initiative. Now, what are some of your initial thoughts here?
Well, certainly, it's an interesting project. As you, I'm sure you're aware, it comprises two things. Really, it's an inland trade route, which mirrors the old Silk Road, and, of course, a maritime route, a sea route via India and Sri Lanka, and also Africa through the Mediterranean. For now, I think global investors are kind of ignoring this initiative, perhaps because of the scale of it. I mean, it's really very big undertaking, and it's a very long-term undertaking. And investors, as you know, are fairly short-term oriented these days. The markets have certainly remained circumspect over the recent recovery and correction in commodity prices. If they were really believing that this was going to get underway in a big way, then certainly cement and iron ore and other prices would probably be stronger. Also outside Asia, I don't think there's much understanding of the historical resonance, the politics behind using the term Silk Road or variations of that in China, and how that connects with the former period when China was a very powerful nation in trade with Europe. Whereas in the U.S., I think investors are preoccupied with Donald Trump and whether or not he can get his tax cuts and other measures. And because there is so much happening with Trump's constant announcements and faux pas, I think investors are a little distracted right now about what's going on in Asia.
But how do you draw that parallel then? I mean, are there parallels to be had between, say, President Xi Jinping's project versus U.S. President Donald Trump's trillion-dollar infrastructure plan? Because it seems here that we've got plenty of headlines, but lacking in details.
Definitely, to some extent on both sides, I would say that's correct. It's a big number that Donald Trump puts out there, $1 trillion. The really big question in the United States is how they're going to pay for it. Perhaps in China there's a more direct line of reasoning about how you would pay for it over a very long period of time, because it is a long horizon project. In China, of course, you could pay for that through enhanced trade and economic growth in all the countries in between, and also improved trade between China and Europe. So clearly that's strategic goal in China, and the long-term basis of paying for it, I think, is a little clearer. In the short term in China, it's really a concern about state-owned enterprises and debt and the construction companies and others that would be involved, and whether this simply adds to the burden. In the U.S., by contrast, I think investors are very eager to see the tax cuts, and they believe that fiscal stimulus would certainly help. But there are more serious questions in the U.S. about how they're going to balance their budget in the long run, I feel.
So what are the kinds of, say, concerns or risks, or what do investors want to know, you think, before they can safely hang their hats, so to speak, on this One Belt, One Road initiative?
Well, I think investors are really very cautious about any long-term undertaking right now. But if we think about the enthusiasm that investors have shown for Trump's fiscal stimulus and variations on that theme, which are now starting to surface elsewhere, like in Australia, there's a number of new initiatives designed to boost infrastructure in Australia to help grow the economy. I think it's becoming more in vogue for politicians to talk about infrastructure. Now, if you look at it through that lens, then, of course, this is just about the biggest infrastructure project you could possibly imagine. I mean, it's huge, this Chinese project. So certainly if they were to go through with it over a long period of time, because it would probably be a 30, 50-year project from beginning to end, that's a massive undertaking. But we have to remember investors are skeptical. Right now they're concerned that in China there's just too much debt and the economy might actually be quite fragile as a result of that. So I think you need to balance those two things. The natural skepticism of investors about the long term and their immediate focus on the short term.
So now that you say it's more in vogue to talk about infrastructure, as for Jevons Global, how does that talk kind of color your investment decisions, or does it at all? I mean, do you have a certain bias right now? Do you lean more towards, say, the U.S. versus China? Like, how do you play this out?
Well, we've actually been significantly underweight China, but we've been taking an effective Chinese exposure through basic materials companies, particularly in Australia and in the US and the UK, where a lot of them are listed. So, you know, that's things like, you know, iron ore companies like Rio and BHP. In France, there's a nickel play called Eramet, and a whole host of such entities. So we're actually choosing to take our Chinese exposure through the material side of things. But what I would say about the U.S. investment is we've been pretty bullish on the U.S. for a long time, and we've been overweight the U.S. for probably the last 5 years. But we're now actually bringing that to a neutral position, and we'll probably go underweight because we think the U.S. is much later in the cycle in terms of the stock market than is, say, Europe. So we've been selling U.S. positions and buying European positions. The sector composition of that is a little different now. We're actually buying some automakers in Europe. We bought BMW in Germany, and we bought Michelin, the tire company in France. We're also buying Austrian firms that are exposed to the construction sector and Swedish firms that are exposed to machine tools and other growth areas.
And why this shift to Europe then? Is it because, you know, those geopolitical concerns, those have been allayed post that France election?
Well, certainly we got more comfortable buying France post the election. We were a little nervous about what would happen if Le Pen was elected. But France was showing good signs of a pickup in both the market and also the economy earlier. And indeed, that's the case right across Europe. So the main reason why we're buying Europe is it's showing signs of relative strength economically. And we've got to remember it's a couple of years behind the U.S. in terms of the recovery from the financial crisis. And we think that story is going to play out over a number of years. On the geopolitical concerns, the main thing we've been doing is we're buying defense-related companies in Europe because there was a lot of discussion when Trump was there, with Trump administration about European NATO defense spending below the 2% target. So we bought a couple of defense groups in Europe, Rheinmetall Group, which is in Germany, that is a vehicle manufacturer, and also Thales, which is a big cybersecurity and aerospace firm in France.
Fascinating stuff. Hey, thank you so much for speaking to us. That was Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer with Jevons Global in Sydney.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Quit eating your burgers off a coffee table. If you want to eat a burger, put it on a bar. Follow your instincts to B-Dubs for the new All-American Cheeseburger. Fresh, juicy beef smashed till it's crispy around the edges, covered in gooey cheese, and stacked to the ceiling with deliciousness. And knock that baby down with a frosted beer at the bar. Just like the sports gods intended. The new All-American Cheeseburger at Buffalo Wild Wings. Roar! Please drink responsibly.